Lutheran Talk.
In Lutheranism, I come as a guilty sinner in need of hearing the forgiving words of Christ every single time I gather. Every single time.
Lutheran Music. The new Lutheran Public Radio app. Download for iPhone, Android, Windows Phone, and Kindle at issuesetc.org.
What is the difference between someone who says, I'm concerned about the content of the following book being put into the hands of my school children, and someone who says, I'm concerned about the content of the following book being put into the hands of my school children, when the first person is concerned about the content because maybe it's too explicit sexually or something like that, and the second person is concerned about the content when it has to do with maybe the author is a white European and that is going to promote imperialism or some kind of racist view. Is there a difference between the two? Joining us to talk about book bans on the left and the right on this Friday afternoon, Anna Mussman. She's a stay-at-home mother of two children, author of the blog Sister, Daughter, Mother, Wife, and a recent column for The Federalist titled Book Bans Are Political Proxy Wars and Conservatives Are Losing. Anna, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
A couple terms that we need to define before we get into the subject proper, and you use this term in the course of your article for The Federalist, the term trigger or trigger warning. What does that mean?
It originally came out of, I think, chat rooms and places on the internet where it was originally very narrow. It meant giving a heads up about content that might trigger traumatic memories in people who'd experienced sexual violence. And then eventually the term became applied much more broadly, and most people, when they use it now, they just mean giving essentially a heads up about something that might disturb people before they come across that material. And the term is usually, it's often kind of used in a negative way by conservatives. We talk about how liberals and progressives have gotten to the point where they tend to want to attach trigger warnings to all kinds of things in college classrooms and, you know, mention anything that might trigger anybody. Well, whether there's this white colonial guy in this book, and, you know, if you have ever been a black person, that might trigger things, or, you know, there's somebody who's rich in this book, and if you've ever been poor, that might make you feel bad. So it's something that sounds compassionate when applied sensibly, but has become a very political kind of thing.
So when it comes to the issue of books, literature, the kind of books that are put in front of our kids in the classrooms, you know, at the lower grades all the way up into higher education, what's the difference between a trigger warning and a content warning?
Well, usually I hear the term content warning applied to books lower down in education, high school and down, and often aimed at parents. And there's a lot of sex and violence and all kinds of very explicit material in young adult books these days. You know, I just picked one up myself very recently, and there was no indication that there was anything explicit in the book. You know, the character is supposed to be 16 or 17, and as I read, all of a sudden, you know, there's a lesbian love scene, characters are doing all kinds of things. And so there are a lot of parents who are upset and want to know ahead of time if the materials their children will be assigned in school have adult content. But again, content warnings have also become political because there's a backlash against this parental concern, and you'll hear progressives of the American Library Association saying that content warnings will just invite censorship, because if the parent knows that there's some kind of adult material in the book, then they can use that to object to their child reading it.
Now, you say that all of this on both sides, both the progressive side and the conservative side, this is really, this discussion of books, what should we be reading and having our kids read, is really proxy for kind of political disagreements. Explain that, if you would.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting that there's a sort of contradiction here, in that you tend to get the liberals saying, well, no, stop it with the content warnings for the younger grades, and you tend to have the conservatives saying, you know, you're being silly with all these trigger warnings in the upper grades or in college and universities. And I think it really shows the fact that both sides are fighting over what should be what should we be conveying in education? What is education, and what is good, and what should people learn? But they're not being quite open about it. They're not able to say to each other, you know, there's something really rotten in this book, and that is bad, or, you know, this material is a really, really wonderful material, and everybody needs to learn about this particular virtue. And so we get this language and this back and forth.
Is part of the problem here, Anna, that the term censorship is almost uniformly understood in a negative way? And I don't know if that's, it's kind of like the word propaganda that originally, in its original use, was not a negative term. It was actually used quite positively. Now is almost uniformly understood to be a negative thing. If both
right.
sides are calling for censorship of something and it to some degree, it sounds like at least they agree that there should be some kind of filter in place between kids and literature.
Right, right. And I think that's key in, as conservatives, we can use that point to point out that we all realize that there is something called truth and there is something called goodness, and that ideas really do matter. Both sides, by their actions, are acknowledging that ideas really matter and can have a huge effect on helping or harming somebody who's learning. And I think that as conservatives, it would be very helpful to try to kind of get beyond some of all these words that we're throwing back and forth and get beyond accusations of censorship and be able to be perhaps more open about what we're trying to offer. You know, we want to have books that have goodness and truth and beauty in them. I think our failure to do so is part of why the progressives tend to be winning a lot of this cultural fight. They tend to be the ones who are presenting material that, even though it may contain material that I think is very harmful, often it's vibrant, it's well-written, it's interesting. They're the ones who are presenting a lot of new material. They're the ones who've written most of these new young adult books and things like that. And the conservatives tend to be the ones who are just sitting here saying, oh, not that, not that. You know, we want something safe. And we're not presenting a lot of new, really good material. And I think we're going to have to change that.
Well, what about also the old material? I mean, you even cite an example of, perhaps it's anecdotal, of Shakespeare being set on with trigger warnings because it's white European writing and a white European author. What about old books, reintroducing some of those?
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah, there's definitely a lot that can be offered there. And there were a lot of the trigger warning debate kind of flared a while ago when some students at Columbia University published a paper talking about how reading kind of old white European literature is bad and we need to have more of other things. But they made an interesting point. You know, they were complaining in this article about a professor who was teaching, I think, Ovid's Metamorphosis and taught a rape scene, but only talked about, oh, you know, the language is so beautiful and, you know, look at this and look at that, and never evaluated the morality of the material. And I think that illustrates how often conservatives know that great books from the past are good and useful and that we should be teaching them, but haven't really taught them very well and don't really know what to do with them and how to use them. And I think if we're going to revitalize interest in a lot of the great books from Western history, we need to, again, be looking at them from a more meaningful perspective. We need to be looking at what is good and true and beautiful and not just reading them because they exist and they have some pretty language.
So what kind of literature is the left trying to remove from libraries, from school curricula?
I would suggest that they're trying to remove books that give people a broader perspective. I think it helps progressive ideology if people have a very small sort of bubble, if they see the world only through this very modern, progressive, relativistic kind of perspective. And if we read books from the big span of history, you start realizing how humanity has gone through lots of cycles and lots of ideas. You start seeing which things are constant and which things are new, and you have to start questioning some of the assumptions that progressivism is based on. And I think that when progressives try to say, oh, we need to read, you know, new books from minorities and so on, which is not a bad point. Of course, you know, we should be interested in many people's perspectives and looking, we should look for truth from many places. But they're always presenting books that are contemporary and come from a very contemporary perspective. So they are robbing students of the ability to evaluate all these new books.
Then I guess ideally, you do point out in your article that both sides at least agree that books are important, that books matter. Talk about that.
I think books, yeah, absolutely matter. And I think that books are huge in shaping what we see as normal. And I think that's why both sides are so passionate about this debate, because, you know, if we're talking about, say, a book that has two characters who have an adulterous relationship, reading that book has an effect on how people think and feel about love and relationships and society and adultery and all of these things. And that book can really shape the way people will respond to those sorts of issues in real life, much more than I think we tend to acknowledge. We tend to think, oh, you know, I know that's just a story. But those things shape our feelings. And so both sides realize that which stories we read is going to have a huge effect on what we come out believing.
Anna Mussman is a stay-at-home mother of two children. She's author of the blog Sister, Daughter, Mother, Wife, and a recent column for The Federalist titled Book Bans Are Proxy Wars and Conservatives Are Losing. You can read it under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Anna, thank you very much.
Thank you.
When we come back in Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., we'll talk about a recent comment by Pope Francis regarding Catholic marriages that has some Catholics rather concerned about what he seems to be saying. Glenn Stanton will join us. We'll answer the question, has the left won the culture war? Then, since it's Friday, we'll play Issues, Etc. soundbite of the week in the last 20 minutes of Hour 2 of Issues, Etc. next.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Have you recently graduated from high school or college and are still making up your mind about your future career? Here's an opportunity to serve your neighbor through an extended, uniquely Lutheran service program. It's called the Lutheran Youth Corps. Find out more about the Lutheran Youth Corps at lcms.org/youthcorps. Life together through witness and mercy, the Lutheran Youth Corps, lcms.org/youthcorps.